This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On the show this week, we'll be hearing from Gretchen Butz about being a TD and some of the rules that she often sees broken. But first, Robert Kellerhaus joins me to preview this year's Galway Downs Advanced and CIC 3-star, which host the Addaquan Gold Cup Series from March the 30th through April the 3rd. Hi, Robert. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, just a few days to go now to the start of your event there at Galway Downs. So let's talk about what's in store, first of all, this year.
Well, we've got, luckily, Ian Starr coming back to help us again with our tracks in 2016 and beyond. So he came out in January and worked on the CIC tracks. And really, our CIC courses are, in all reality, a build-up to what we do for November, which is really our the biggest event we run out here. And the CIC serves a lot of roles for us here in April 1st, 2nd, and 3rd for the West Coast riders. It gets them up to standard competition, which gets them prepared for either going out to a 3-star back in the East Coast or going for a second CIC at the Twin in a couple weeks after, or heading off to Rolex in the month after our event.
And
we're looking forward to sending a few more off this year.
Right, an important warm-up for them then, for that CIC, and of course a Gold Cup event as well for us, for the USCAs, which is always important.
Yeah, the Gold Cup competitions have, for years signified something that we've been really proud to be part of, which is a series of shows across the country that have a focus on providing a quality competition, hopefully some decent media coverage, and hopefully some nice cross country to jump, all on a setting that is conducive to creating an atmosphere. And I believe that standard is really important for our riders to have that going forward for, at least the preparatory competitions and going to CCIs. Creating that atmosphere, promoting eventing, doing things that advance the sport, not just for the riders, but for the spectators and for the sponsors, is a very big deal if we want to move the sport forward. And a lot of our upper-level riders are getting a chance to go experience different things at different places. And when you go into a place that has quite a bit of atmosphere, it shouldn't be the first time you go and see that. So we're honored to be part of the Gold Cup, and we're definitely looking forward to seeing that continue and expand in the future.
Talk about all the divisions that you have and the entries, Robert, if you would.
Well, this show is we run a lot of levels of the show because we kind of have to be everything to everybody at this time of year, with people bringing along young horses, people bringing along first-time horses at a new level, and people bringing back their campaigners that they've competed for the last several years at the same level. So it's an interesting mix. And so this year, funnily enough, our advanced horse trials has got equal entries to our CIC 3-star, which is 10 in each, which is lighter than we'd expect in our CIC 3-star, probably the lightest entry we've ever had in that class, but coupled with the heaviest entry we've ever had in the advanced horse trials. The people who are bringing along their next generation of advanced horses, they need a different advanced track to go to. And Galway provides that. Ian's designed a different course for them to do. It's not the same technical standard as the CIC 3-star, and he doesn't believe it should be. And ultimately, we're trying to bring up those horses as well as provide the polish needed for our advanced campaigners to go head off to Rolex or to Jersey or to Bromont.
And of course, with Ian Stark designing those courses now, you've had him there for a while, haven't you? He's becoming increasingly popular here in the States. Has he made any subtle changes this year, Robert, that the riders who are familiar with the course will not know about?
Really, the biggest change that they'll see is within the combinations at each jump. He does make not just subtle changes, but big changes in terms of where he decides to use the varying terrain that we have here, because Callaway is really pretty flat. But at the same time, he can incorporate the track rail and the hill that we have on the property, the slope, I should say, that we have on the property in different fashions, depending on where he puts it on the course. And for the CIC, the little 3% grade that we have that we call our hill, not really a hill, but it's what we get to work with, he has that going very early in the course. So the technical questions he asks earlier on the top of the hill are not as severe, because the property provides for a half-mile gallop from the bottom to the top of this slope that we call, you know, our hill here. And then it also has the varying terrain of the racetrack where they go in and out. So he's incorporated a couple turns inside the racetrack, and really within the just over six minute course you have on a CIC 3-star course, there's not tons more you can do. He's got a big trip to the trade fair area, changes to the one of our four water complexes that are significant. I have to double check to see if he's even added in the waterfall fence that we had for November. And I think that might be a good conversation for Ian, actually.
We definitely need to get him on the show and talk about all the courses he's doing here. But I think you have some new faces officiating this year.
Yeah, Christina Klingspor, who is a judge from Sweden, is coming out to join us to be the president of our ground jury. And she is being assisted by Mark Weisbecker, who is one of our fantastic up-and-coming judges in this country. And we're thrilled to have them both as part of our panel. And we have Valerie Crail is the president of the one-star competition. And they're being joined by Gretchen Butts, who is our 3-4-star TD, with Mary Duno, who's our 1-2-star TD. And Mary, of course, is another up-and-coming licensed official, and she's been doing a great job of advancing her her own license and making things happening in this country. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have a critical shortage of licensed officials in this country, and it's a difficult road to go down because of the fact that you're trying to balance someone who can be a licensed official is definitely not easy. You know, a lot of different kind of work involved in that than just riding your horse, but at the same time also have that irreplaceable background in the sport of eventing, which you can't teach. You can't teach somebody what it's like to go ride a 3-star course or 4-star course. And so we're fortunate to have some really good developing officials, complemented by some fantastic seasoned officials for the show. And we're looking forward to hopefully advancing them on in their FEI careers.
All important, of course. Absolutely, Robert. And finally, let's talk a little bit about the other attractions, because I know you have a full schedule for competitors and visitors to Galway Downs. What do you have in mind for them this year by way of entertainment and side attractions?
Well, a lot of entertainment. The thing about Galway Downs, the owner has taken the property and is working to create many people venues, if you will. The front portion of the property that used to be the old main entrance, for those people who are familiar with it, is now the focal point of what the owner is calling the village. And the village includes a big 5,500 square foot reception area or banquet hall or whatever you want to call it, a place to have a party, basically, a wedding, a reception, a corporate function, a competitor's party. And it's complemented by a kitchen, bar, and other facilities in this 8,800 square foot total structure that used to be our old hay barn. And it was formerly a big, ugly white structure that housed hay. And now it is a fantastic, it's a beautiful piece of architecture. They constructed something that's fitting for the area that is very, very impressive to see when you walk in. It's impressive and yet fits into a barn atmosphere and into a equestrian atmosphere. It's not overstated. It's unbelievable how good a job these guys have done with it. And that will be nearing completion for our event next weekend. And we'll be able to highlight that to people, as well as the grounds in between the old hay barn and my old office, which is where the trade fair is. That is now all venues, including an amphitheater, a 500-seat amphitheater, and an area called the Meadows, where we have a lake that was created by recycling all of our old wash rack water, and it goes through a system of natural filters and pumps to clean the water. And now our old wash rack water is doing its job, creating a beautiful setting. So for those who haven't seen Galloway for a little while, it's changing rapidly. And for those who plan on coming out in November, in addition to the village, which is featuring the Carriage House, which is our wedding and hospitality and bar and restaurant, it's going to move on forward to an area for lodging. We're going to have 17 units with 51 rooms that people can rent out when they come for the weekend, as well as a permanent structure where people can also, slightly larger building, like 1,600 square feet, they can rent out for the weekend, and additional RV hookups for those who come equipped with their own living arrangements. So Galloway's changing shape significantly as a facility and a structure for people to be able to enjoy the property. And your original question is, what kind of entertainment we're going to have? Well, we're going to have live music. We're going to have our food trucks. They've become a little bit of a signature. So it's not just your average horse show food. We have lobster rolls and unbelievable coconut pancakes. And these guys, I think there's 5 different food trucks coming over the 3 days of the competition, and including a margarita truck, which is popular at the end of the day. And those are all things that, again, make the atmosphere a little bit more enjoyable for the general public.
Oh, my goodness. You've made me hungry already, Robert. It's something for everyone there. And importantly, we should mention the sponsors, Robert. Those faithful sponsors, a family of sponsors that you've built over the years. Let's talk about them.
Well, at number one, this event features the Gold Cup, which is the USCA's collection of fantastic sponsors, including Adequam, which is the title sponsor of the Gold Cup class. And we're honored to have them as part of our show. And then our Del Mar Eventing family of sponsors includes Equine Insurance of California. Joe and Donna have been just right behind Eventing for the last 15 years and have been helping us advance the sport big time out here. And then we have Professionals Choice, which is a Southern California-based company that was started by a gentleman named Dal Scott, and he was instrumental in creating the sport medicine boot, and he created a lot of fantastic products in the Western world. And then they started opening up their lines to include the English world. And Michelle Scott, who's been a huge supporter of Eventing at multiple levels, including at the AECs, including at the USCA National, and of course through the events that we run, they are both presenting sponsors for this show, including Devaku and CWD, which is actually one company, believe it or not, now. But their saddles, it's something that I wish I had more of when I was younger, because my old student Siegfried, I'm not going to blame my bad riding on my saddle, but the Devaku helped me and my long legs to stay a little bit more in balance from going around cross country. And we're honored to have those guys as presenting sponsors for a long period of time now, and they've stepped up for 2016.
Wonderful. Well, we look forward to that. March the 30th through April the 3rd there at Galway Downs in Temecula, California. Robert, thank you very much for coming on the program again, and we hope you have a good and safe event there again.
Oh, and you're very welcome. And we also have a new breeding thing going on through the USCA and USCF. They're partnering up with our nation's sport horse breeding outfits, and we're putting a highlight on that And if I failed to mention it, I would be remiss. They're going to be distributing some new media at this show. And one of them is going to highlight our guys here locally, Sunsprite Warmbloods. They've been, again, another big portion of the reason why you see so many nice horses coming up through our ranks out here. So I didn't want to forget that important element that's coming down the road for this CIC next
Absolutely.
Week.
Very noteworthy. Well, Robert, thank you again. Always good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Well, Gretchen Butts joins us now to continue our series on technical delegates. And I know that you probably have lots of stories that you could tell from your experiences, Gretchen, but they may not all be fit for broadcast.
Right. That's probably an accurate statement.
All right. Well, let's start with the technical side of things, really. From your perspective, you know, very often rules are broken that need not be because the riders are just not reading the small print. What are the most common rules as far as you're concerned?
Well, Chris, I think you preface your question with the answer in that, you know, a lot of times riders are, as we both know, and the rule book indicates as well, riders are, the competitors are ultimately responsible for knowing the rules and abiding by them, applying them, you know, in whatever situation they face and so on and so on. Having said that, you know, the rule book is probably one of the least familiar tools that any rider has with them when they go to competition. And this is, it's not just, I think we tend to think that it's more the inexperienced riders who perhaps haven't read the rule book, but I certainly find enough upper level riders who are just uncertain about things as well. And what I suggest to anybody is, you know, in addition to, yes, please carry the rule book with you, you know, have a working knowledge of it. Don't try and memorize it, because even for us officials, things change enough. And it's important that we go with the verbiage as it is stated in the rule book. You know, there are some things that are must and shall and will and may, and those have a meaning on, you know, how things are to be interpreted and, you know, what the intention is. One of my favorite sayings when I brief the jump judges is that, you know, as the TD, I may not personally agree with every rule that's in the rule book, but in my job, it's not whether I agree or disagree. It's in applying the rules in the intention, the spirit of which they were intended, and, you know, as fairly and as evenly as possible, you know, which is what I ask of them to do as well. But, you know, I think if anyone were to, there are people who have a coach, and I would think that it would be something in that relationship early on that would need to be clear to the coach, student, coach, rider, you know, that relationship as far as how much the rider is counting on the coach to support them with correct rules and therefore correct applications as such. Which is sometimes a bit of a blurry circumstance. But even in that, even if a rider has a coach and they are, I'm sure, probably paying the coach in some way, shape, or form to be their coach, that the implication is clear as to what they can expect. But even in that relationship, for the rider to realize that it is still their responsibility to know what they're doing out there and to act accordingly. As far as what rules are typically broken, I guess probably the cross-country phase is where most of them are. That's probably the obvious area that we see rules that are not always followed completely. Knowing that when a rider, for instance, in the dangerous riding, you know, riding dangerously, as we've said before, you know, that is certainly the responsibility of the rider, because they're the ones sitting in that saddle, you know, having that connection with the horse, that partnership on any given day, leaving the start box. And even though, and we all know, you know, the warm-up can be a completely different scenario from what they actually get out on course, still it's the rider who has to make the decision whether the horse is just, you know, whether they are not having the day that they were thinking, whether the horse is not reacting to the aids, again, going too fast, going too slow. any of the above could apply, and for riders to realize that if it's not their day, then they just need to stop what they're doing before something gets either unsafe or dangerous to themselves or, you know, spectators, jump judges, anyone else. I also think knowing the definition, the accurate definition of what a refusal is, what a runout is, and for riders to realize, which many of them probably don't, that they can ask the jump judge for clarification of any jumping penalty. You know, did I have a refusal? Especially typically we see it like with corners or narrow fences where horses may not jump as straight as would be ideal, and they take a flag down in the process, you know, for the rider then to, and I'm sure some of those circumstances, the riders are wondering, well, was I clear or was I not? You know, riders can, you know, take a moment to turn around, ask the jump judge for clarification. And certainly in our briefings, you know, we indicate to the jump judges that this could happen so that they need to be placed and confident enough in, you know, their understanding of the rules that they can promptly reply to the rider, well, yes, you had a run out, or no, you were clear, which is what they can do. They can't indicate to the rider what to do next, but they can indicate whether there was a penalty. And just, you know, knowing that that is an option to riders if they are uncertain about something. The other thing that we typically see is riders continuing after knowing full well that they are eliminated on the course. You know, having had three clear refusals at a single obstacle, or depending on the level, three or four cumulative refusals, or disobedience really is the proper term, on course. Because then, although our rules do not indicate specifically all the time that the FAI is where we defer to for any kind of issue that might be gray, that clearly continuing while being eliminated on course is considered being dangerous. And, you know, a penalty will often occur because of that. So those are probably two of the first circumstances that come to mind when you ask me that.
And then, of course, there's the occasion where a fence might be taken out. Is it then the responsibility of the rider to know that update, the organizers to convey that message? I mean, what is the circle of communication there to ensure that they don't get eliminated because they've jumped a fence that was taken out or missed?
Right, that was considered dangerous or, right. Yes, you know, it is actually the responsibility of management to see that riders are informed. At a horse trial, one-day horse trial, that responsibility usually comes to the starter who is in that line of, you know, communication, who we ask, you know, we officials and organizers ask to share that information, because they're the ones who have, you know, the verbal contact with every single rider. Hopefully that, you know, we really try for those circumstances not to happen in such a, you know, kind of an 11th hour fashion. If a fence is taken, you know, in the ideal world, when that course is open at 3:00, the day before the competition begins, all the obstacles should be as they will be on and during the competition phase. For example, the fence is being flagged properly. Any roping that has to be done is in place, you know, proper numbers, et cetera. And then after that, I guess, quite typically, some of the final decorations may not be in place. And if that is the case, it's always helpful and really proper for that to be noted on the start box. So when riders walk, they know that, oh, well, there still may be some decorations coming, you know, footing, last minute footing, especially weather dependent, that kind of thing, will still be, is still being worked on, you know, that kind of thing.
And what about in the show jumping phase? Gretchen, what sort of common faults do you find that riders are making there, and there's really no need for them to get eliminated if they were paying attention?
Yeah, probably the tricky one there is if they have a problem at a fence and there is confusion on the part of the rider as to whether the horse actually attempted to jump and is having a knockdown or is not jumping and has a refusal. That probably is the stickiest issue that a rider will endure out there, because then it's up to the judge to determine that as well, if it's a knockdown, then the whistle would blow, and the rider hopefully would hear the whistle and know that they have, you know, their round has been interrupted. If the judge feels that that was, a refusal, hang on for a minute, let me make sure I'm explaining this clearly. If, like, say, in a combination, the A element, the rider knocks it down and carries on and then jumps through, then that's scored one way. If the rider has a slide-through is typically what happens. The rail comes down, the horse ends up on the, could be still on the takeoff side or even on the landing side. That's when it gets sticky as far as how the judge interprets that as to whether it's a knockout or whether it's a refusal. If it's a refusal, then the judge will blow the whistle, take the rider off the field of play, and, you know, repair the obstacle, et cetera, and then re-signal them to start when the course is and the fence has been repaired and the course is, available again. If it's a knockdown, if the judge feels that the horse did indeed physically, mechanically try and jump, made an effort to jump, but still is like in a heap on the, you know, either on the jump or on the landing side, if they feel that's a knockdown, and the rider should still go on, you know, they have essentially cleared that obstacle with the penalty of a knockdown, but not as a disobedience, as a refusal, then no signal device would sound and the rider would then go on. And a lot of times that's probably the area of most confusion for riders because they don't know what to do. And often they're a little distraught as well and may or may not have heard the signal device. And that's probably the most obvious moment of confusion.
Yes, that when the adrenaline's going and having to think on your feet as well for a rider, not necessarily knowing what to do, as you say, I'm sure is common. But what about the starting before the bell, Gretchen? Is that a common one?
It is. A lot of times it depends a lot on the signaling device that's available. You know, if we have electronic timing where we have the horn available, that is very audible, sometimes to the point of being too loud, but still very clear, that's one thing. But a whistle like, where I am today, I mean, the wind is blowing at 20 miles an hour. And if I were using a whistle, I would have to be sure that the rider could clearly hear my signal device. And as officials, we have to be sensible about the circumstances and, the equipment that we're using and making sure that it's it's fair, if you will, and proper for what the rider is receiving on their end, too. A lot of times it's like in the situation we discussed before, a lot of times it's educational and how a particular official chooses to handle that. Again, considering all the variables may vary from one to the other. But at the end of the day, we really do try and keep people in the competition as best we can because we really would like to see them, go through the finish flags of the last phase.
Absolutely, and have a confident ride. That's what it's all about, Gretchen. Well, I'm curious how long you've been doing this role, playing this role of TD for the USEA.
Well, I received my license from the Federation in 1985. Right. So, long time.
So there's a lot of stories, probably a lot of interesting memoirs there for you to catalogue one day.
Yeah, there are, and it's... it's been quite a journey and a journey that, where the learning and the opportunities never cease to exist. And, for me personally, I think any official who thinks that they've kind of maxed out on the learning curve, needs to kind of rethink that whole thing. Mm-hmm. But it's a challenging job. It's solving puzzles, it's pieces of the puzzle that you kind of work with and make sure that you have the right outcome at the end.
How many events would you be scheduled to officiate at this year so far? I'm sure you get bookings as the year rolls out, but how many so far?
Well, I'm a judge also, so I try and, ideally for me, I would be judging, probably a 50-50 kind of split there. I think more people know me as a technical delegate than a judge, and it seems that this year I'm probably TDing a bit more than what I'm judging, although that does change as organizers' needs change as well. I I have gotten to a point in my career with, you know, the fact that I run a business full time with my husband and have other things to do, you know, that I'm responsible for as well. I, you know, the officiating is not my full time job. It's certainly a passion of mine, or I wouldn't do it. And I think, you know, it's a little bit giving back to the sport as well for all the things it's given me. I try not to schedule more than two a month, and try not to have them on back-to-back weekends. Now, of course, this month is different. That's not quite coming up according to plan A, and that happens too. And it's tough when, for example, I was at Carolina last weekend and, you know, I left on a Monday and got back on a Sunday, but that's just the nature of the beast and, you know, no surprises. You sign on to, you accept the responsibility when you're asked and, you know, it is what it is.
Absolutely. But I'm sure there are stories that, you know, that would be very interesting to our listeners, but are there anything, is there any one story that comes to mind that you'd like to share with us, Gretchen? I know I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here, but I'm sure there are some funny moments.
I would have to, I can't say there's one that immediately comes to mind. Maybe if you'd given me a moment or probably a day to think about this. But, you know, I think though you raise a point as far as funny moments. I think at the, you know, with any kind of situation when we have to talk to people, you know, they see us coming their way, or, you know, there's a request over the PA system, you know, would so-and-so please, you know, meet with the TD and talk with the TD. And of course, I'm sure everybody is thinking doom and gloom, but it really isn't that way. You know, we really do try and be approachable and try and identify clearly, you know, if there's a problem, what the problem is and, you know, what options, you know, solutions, that kind of thing we have in solving it. And, you know, when you can have a conversation, you know, with a rider about this and let them feel that they are, you know, I mean, their input is important and, you know, they can contribute to just kind of figuring out how that solution is going to come, you know, whether it's going to be a positive one or a not so favorable one, but they've got input as well. And I think at the end of the day, that's, you know, that's the best we all can do.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to come on the program and share your stories with us and some advice there to riders on how not to get eliminated. Just familiarize yourself with the rules. Gretchen, thank you so much. Always good to catch up with you.
Always a pleasure, Chris. Thanks for what you do.
And on next week's episode, Mary Dunno will be continuing our series on technical delegates. And we'll also be hearing from Bernadette Cogdall, who will preview this year's Fork Horse Trials. That's all coming up next week on the USCA's official podcast. Don't forget to keep up with us on our social media channels. Just look for USCA, and the latest news and leaderboards are updated constantly on the website at useventing.com. So until next week, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world, and enjoy your eventing.